have a question for you. Have you ever heard the term girl boss? Today, I'm about to introduce you to the powerhouse woman who made that term a common household term, Sophia Amoruso. I've known Sophia for a while, but for many years, she didn't know I existed. But that recently changed when we ended up being in the same mastermind together. She is a New York Times bestselling author, an entrepreneur, and founder of Business Class. In our conversation, we discuss imposter syndrome, how Sophia's wildly successful career was filled with the lowest of lows, and how she dealt with major press backlash. Y'all, prepare your hearts. We are spilling the tea and it is getting so good. I can't wait for you to listen to this interview. So here it is with Sophia Amoruso. I could not be more ecstatic for this full circle moment. I'm going to get to why this is a full circle moment in a second, but I have to give a shout out to my little sister. Her name is Zoe Bell. And a few years ago, she handed me this book, and it was a bright pink book. And I said, "Girl Boss." And she said, "Jasmine, you have to read it because it changed my life." I was like, okay, this is a lot for my little sister. You know, there is about a 15-year difference between myself and my sister. And I read this book and I'm so impressed, and it has really cool art in it and the story is compelling and it's written simply but compellingly. And I was like, this person has intrigued me. So I start following the journey of the author. Her name is Sophia. And I'm on social media and I see that Sophia and her team are hosting this thing called a Girl Boss Rally in downtown Los Angeles. I buy myself a ticket and I say, "Hey, does anybody want to go with me?" And I just decided I'm going to drive to downtown by myself. And for like an expert level introvert, this is not how I roll. And I remember distinctly waiting in a line in an alley. And there was like a wall with a mural and they were letting people in slowly. And there was like a female DJ. They had these art setups.
You went to the first one.
I went to the first one. Okay. I was there and I was like, wow. And as I went, and I remember seeing many amazing speakers, and I sat in the back of the room by myself. And I thought to myself, I really want to speak at a Girl Boss Rally. And that was just something that I set my intentions on. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know the people that are here. So let's flash forward to a full circle moment for people who've been here on the podcast. I'm a proud law school dropout. I dropped out of UCLA Law School with a full ride scholarship. So just imagine my surprise when the Girl Boss team reaches out and says, "Jasmine, we would like you to speak at the Girl Boss Rally at, wait for it, UCLA Law School." So I feel like everything in my life was leading up to that moment. So just imagine, y'all, how incredibly excited I am to chat with the woman who showed me how to iterate, change, and grow with every new challenge in front of me. Y'all, please welcome Sophia Amoruso. Thank you. Duh.
Thanks for having me. That's an incredible story. I knew you had spoke at the Girl Boss Rally, and I didn't realize you had attended one. And I'm kind of like, you were like a photographer. I've been watching you for a while, just like I've been aware of you for so long. I definitely before the first Girl Boss Rally. So it's just like now that I'm in this similar space where I have a course, it's just, you know, and I'm creating more social content. I'm not just throwing stuff up and just watching you. It's just been so inspiring.
Oh, we're going to get to your social in a minute. Okay. We're definitely not going to do an audit. No, this is truly like every podcast conversation, because it's not an interview. Every podcast conversation is simply to reveal a different side of a business owner. We want to get real. We want to get gritty. And every conversation that you and I have had subsequently since a first meeting each other has been just that. It's just what you see is 100% what you get. So let's kind of get the wheels greased. And so we are going to have a flash fire question set. I've never done this before. It might be totally lame, but I'm like, let's just fire in. Okay. So number one, your favorite thing to eat for breakfast?
Bacon.
Number two, what was your first car?
Oh, a 1991 Volkswagen Jetta 4-cylinder automatic was so heavy, but also an automatic, it couldn't really go up hills. And then, so it didn't work. It's actually dangerous. I was like in the slow lane. And then I got I think it was like an early 90s, like Honda Civic SI hatchback. And that was like cool. And it was a stick. And I got a little racer steering wheel. It was like a 10-year-old car, but I got I like tricked it out and had like an exhaust and stuff.
A decade old car with a racing wheel. There you have it. A Honda hatchback. Okay. So what was the last book that you have read and loved?
Oh gosh. Well, I just picked up my friend's book called humor, seriously. It's Jennifer Aker and Naomi Bogdonis. I'm not sure if I'm getting that right. Sounds Greek. I'm Greek. I should know how to say that. And they're both professors at Stanford, and Jennifer teaches a class on humor and humor's role in business. And it just came out, and I'm doing an IG live with them on Friday, but I just love that because humor, I mean, I know for you, for me, it's just like allowing people to get to know like who you are, your personality, and not take yourself too seriously has been like really, a really big part of my career, actually, not just like something people like, but like really important for all of the brands I've created. So it's cool that someone's written a book about it. So I've read part of it. It just came out.
I love it. I'm going to definitely check it out. So what would you say if somebody had to ask, what is your superpower?
Naming things.
Oh, that's good. That is a superpower. I do not possess that superpower. That's so good. Okay. So now I'm going to cachet that. So whenever I need to name something, be like, yo, Sophia. Okay. Yeah, last one. What is one thing you wish more people asked you?
I don't know, like about music or something that doesn't have to do with work.
Oh, I actually was watching your stories and somebody, you had like an AMA where people can submit questions. Yeah. And then you listed all of the bands that you really like. And I thought that was pretty intriguing. What are some of the bands that come to the top of your mind?
I mean, it was like Alice Cooper and Funkadelic and Pearls Before Swine and like some it's not super esoteric. And then of course there's like the Beatles and the Beach Boys and there's stuff that like everybody's onto, but I worked in a record store, I don't know, when I was like 20 or something. And I just like learned a lot and was really into music and then started a business. And then my music taste never really evolved because I didn't have time to like be into it. You know, I was only like your hobbies. It's easy when you start a business for your hobbies to just like go by the wayside and your interests and be like, okay, I'm good at this now. And my iTunes library is like a relic, but I still like it all.
That's amazing. Okay. So thank you for indulging me in our flash fire question. So we're going to get into a little bit of a conversation and I'm going to start on Instagram because you wrote, quote, at some point we've all been diagnosed with imposter syndrome. You know, the symptoms, irrational racing thoughts, screaming at you that you don't belong, aren't good enough, can't swing it, are doomed to fail. They're all going to point and laugh. The list goes on. Side effects include loss of focus, indecision, wallflower-itis, feeling stuck, general malaise, and worse, silence, end quote. Now, I bet a lot of the people that are listening right now can resonate with this feeling in some capacity. When have you felt like an imposter through your entrepreneurial journey?
Oh my God, at every stage, every single day. Like, it's awful and I haven't gotten over it. Like, I'm on Clubhouse and I'm hearing people just like, you know, I'm supposed to be an expert and I'm like, you know, super accomplished and whatever. And just like hearing how much these smaller creators and brand owners and marketers and, you know, entrepreneurs have to contribute, I feel so intimidated. Like, I feel like yesterday's iPhone or something. Like, just, you know, just being in, I've been in the thought leadership space for a long time, but actually the educational space is very new for me. So I've been like inspiring, but I haven't necessarily given people kind of like didactic tools and advice. So now I find the space that I'm in intimidating. But I mean, there's a kind of like fine line between intimidating and like, haha, I don't belong here. This is funny. You know, I came in the back door. Who are these business guys? They take me seriously, but like, I don't know if I take this seriously, but like, I totally don't belong here. And what are they thinking about me? So I think like, you know, when you feel like an imposter, you're pushing yourself, you're putting yourself in uncomfortable positions and you are putting yourself in a place where you can be judged. But at the same time, it also means that you're kind of sneaking around places that are new, or maybe other people may not think you belong. And you certainly don't think you belong. And that's kind of like a fun duality, I guess, that is really painful. But then also like, fuck, like, then you have to remind yourself, if they can do it, I can too.
So at what point, like when there's a title, like if you are on Clubhouse or if you're brought onto a stage and somebody uses a specific title or a word, is there one more than the others that trigger that imposter syndrome?
I mean, I think when I am asked to speak on behalf of women specifically, like, that got, I wrote a book called Girl Boss, and I'm a woman, and I built a business, and I built a business called Girl Boss. And then the women's movement happened, and I was thrust into this kind of role that I hadn't really anticipated. And I think I still have a lot. I still have a lot to learn, and to be put in this position of like a voice of the women's movement. It's just like, I just like made a pink book called Girl Boss. Like I had a lot to learn. I still have a lot to learn. So I'd say like, you know, business class is the first business that that hasn't had a gendered name. So it's like just realizing that for the last 15 years, I've built businesses with the word girl and gal in them. Like I didn't, just kind of registered recently. And, you know, now I'm really focused on everybody and entrepreneurship in general. And there are specific dynamics to women that I'm aware of. But business class is for everybody. And that feels really good that it's inclusive in that regard.
So now that there's this new chapter in your life where it's focused on inclusivity, was there a point when you were kind of thrusted into the limelight, like being one of like the big voices for female entrepreneurs? Was there a point where it was like a low point where you're like, hey, I didn't ask for this. And all of a sudden there was like a backlash or something negative had happened. Like anything that looks back and be like, hey, I don't know if this is fair.
Yeah. Fair is a funny word.
Okay. Talk to me.
I've never really said, you know, something's not fair. Like I've been like misjudged, and there have been things that are said that are like total speculation. And of course there are headlines that, you know, drive clicks that can be sensational. And all of that is because like I let myself be this poster child of entrepreneurship, like in 2012, 2013, 2014, when my company was worth $350 million. And like, there was no Bumble or Glossier or Away or Outdoor Voices, or like, you know, like there weren't as many women, millennial women building businesses. So I just was like this like freak and very celebrated. Of course, when you stumble, when there's that many eyes on you, people are going to critique that. And I think that's important to a certain extent because it holds leaders accountable, but also it's not all correct, which is really challenging. You know, I think there were so many like ups and downs, mostly building Nasty Gal. I haven't really, the ups and downs weren't as crazy with Girl Boss, and certainly not with Business Class, but it kind of all snowballed when the Netflix series happened. So,
okay, let's put a pin here. Let's bring everybody up to speed. When we talk about Nasty Gal, can you explain what Nasty Gal is in 10 seconds and then talk about the derivative of the Netflix series?
Yeah, totally. Nasty Gal was a fashion brand I built out of an eBay store when I was 22 to eventually over $100 million, raised $50 million in venture capital, hired hundreds of people. And eventually, we opened two stores. Eventually, like, spent a lot of that money, hired the wrong people, and ultimately, the company filed for Chapter 11 at the end of 2016. Which was devastating. I don't want to write a book about it, but there's a lot, I have a lot to say about venture capital in regards to that. And I left. I had already written Girl Boss, started a company called Girl Boss. When you were at that first rally in early 2017, a month after that rally, a Netflix series came out called Girl Boss about my early years starting Nasty Gal. So here I am moving on from the last 10 years of my life, not involved with Nasty Gal. And a few months later, a Netflix series, which was awesome and crazy, but a Netflix series comes out into 150 million households that tells the story of a girl named Sophia starting a company called Nasty Gal. And here are like all these people who have never heard of me thinking that I'm the girl who's like, they think I'm like, put me back 10 years in some ways in terms of like, who am I? Is she like the character? Is she not? The character's abrasive. Did she really say that? Was that real? And when you have Vanity Fair say something like the worst thing, not the worst thing, but like the most problematic thing or whatever about Netflix's Girl Boss is its source material, like that's rough. So I didn't sign up for that. But again, I kind of did sign up for everything. You let Netflix make a show about your life and you don't have script approval. And you're like, hey, I want to let creatives be creatives because that's what I learned about leadership. Anything can happen, but I'm so glad it happened. I'm like, I get to watch that show when I'm like 80 and like laugh and be like, that's crazy that that happened. Like that's half the reasons I do things that I do is to say like, that's weird. To like okay. Look back to like make memories.
I think I want to ask this question, but I'm going to save it till the end. So it was when I hear all of this and I feel like there's something powerful about the way that you speak about things. Brené Brown calls it gold-plated grit, where we can say, I went through a lot of hard things. I'm now on the other side. And so we hear that and we applaud and we're like, wow. But sometimes I think like, what did it feel like to see your name in your face with people writing pretty disparaging things about that? And then what did it learn? And then how did you come back out of it? Like people see you now and you're like, take a lick in and keep on kicking. Like what is in you to do that?
Gosh. So what did it feel like? It felt awful. You know, I felt like I was like damaged goods and that I was just like done for. I wasn't going to have a career after that, that everybody would like turn on me. And like my agent, you know, my book agent, my commercial agent, my ad publicist at the time, like all of these people, my friends in business, there's like zero people who distance themselves from me, which is really weird. You know, they say, you know, there's a couple people, you know, involved with the business on some level, but like my friends, my fellow entrepreneurs, people I had done business with kind of also outside of Nasty Gal were like all there, which was awesome. But publicly, there was like all these people who didn't know who I was, like, you did this, or like, you know, you're not a girl boss, you're a bad boss, or like whatever. And I like wasn't a great boss. I didn't know what I was doing. So how did I get through that? Let's see. I moved quickly. You know, I know there's still like a trail of like pain and trauma, but I find that moving through challenges is way easier than like sitting around and contemplating challenges. Like I just don't, and maybe that's masochistic, maybe it's avoidant. It could be bad. I don't know if it's bad or good, but it works because I'm like not an unhappy person. And, you know, I started Girl Boss 3 months after I left Nasty Gal and got on a stage, like, what? And like 500 women showed up. And, you know, it was like years before I stopped, kind of like I was licking my wounds, even though I was building a business. So, and I had gotten divorced in the middle of 2016, 6 months before Nasty Gal went belly up. So
here's the thing. I want to like hone in there because sorry. A couple days ago on Instagram, why are you saying sorry?
Like, yeah, like all over the place?
No. This is actually my next question. Like, I'm like, oh, wait. Cause I want to say how it looks from the outside. Cause as you're going to go into that, like there was like this loss and mourning of business. And then you had mentioned that you were going through a divorce. Now, a couple days ago on Instagram stories, somebody asked when you were doing that Q&A, this like the same one that we were talking about music. And somebody had asked how you were able to cope going through divorce. And your answer, to the best of my memory, was shockingly honest. It was something like, I met a really great guy while my business fell apart. And then like, as a business owner with like a massive personal brand, followers often see like these wedding photos and vacations and a house in the hills. And like, why all of this is happening behind the scenes? Like, how did it change your perspective?
There's a whole thread on Y Combinator that I've never talked about how I cheated on my husband and like stole Galen, who I've been with for like 5 years.
And Galen is your current partner.
Current partner, yeah. And it's just like, that's crazy that anybody would care that much about my life. Like TMZ like posted that I got divorced and that I paid my ex a pittance, which is a great prenup. We were married for less than a year. But that was like shocking. And then, you know, I called Galen, who's been a friend of mine for 10 years, who lived in the neighborhood. And I was like, please, can you just come babysit me? Like, I cannot be alone. And like, my best friend had to go to work. It was like the 2 days after. And he was like, I can't. I'm sorry. I'm up in Northern California taking care of my dad. His dad was dying of cancer. So I was going through this. He was going through it. And I was like alone in the house eventually. And then we just started like talking. It was like totally platonic. But when you can talk to someone for 3 hours and then 5 hours on FaceTime, it's like, whoa, I can like talk to this person for 5 hours. That's really weird. And eventually that became something. And it wasn't long after the marriage, but you kind of can't choose when things happen. And so, yeah, I was like mourning a marriage while falling in love, starting a business while mourning the loss of my last one. And I guess, you know, in terms of resilience, people say I'm really resilient. And it's like, I never let myself go anywhere. Like I never went anywhere. Mm-hmm. And also resilience, yes, like publicly, financially, the magnitude of my ups and downs has been really great, but it doesn't mean that it's any more valid than someone else's ups and downs, because they're going to be just as gutting for someone else. You know, just because it's loud doesn't mean it hurts more. So I think people give me credit for being so resilient when actually like they've probably gone through the same thing, but maybe nobody was looking.
So for somebody who is really at a dark spot, like somebody who's like mourning the loss of something while possibility fostering the beginning of something else, like what would you tell that person based on your experience?
Yeah, I would just say like cast a line to a year from now and remember that you're going to look back and laugh at like what you're going through now, and that you're going to say, wow, like, I mean, there are things that don't qualify for this. Death, you know, it's like there are certain things that you don't get over in a year. But I just put myself in the future and be like, great, this is going to be in my past. You know, in the same way that I like do stuff to create memories so I can like look back and be like, haha, I did that. I cast myself into the future and look back and think like, I'll be okay. But it doesn't mean that I'm not like, it's not painful and I'm not like wrecked. I just tell myself that, and it kind of helps.
That's powerful. I know without a shadow of doubt, number one, like I'm taking that like to heart, and I know that there's other people who are taking that to heart, like truly. So no, because I read the book Girl Boss, and because we were talking about Nasty Gal, you have started your career, like this massive career, but you started on the back of like an eBay store. And there are people who look at your career now and the iterations and all the amazingness that you've accomplished. And they have their own, like whatever, their proverbial eBay store. And they think, well, I'll never get to where she's at. Like, do you like what similarities did you have then to the similarities you have now? Like being a course creator and being like a thought leader, like what are the similarities between being virtually unknown on eBay to being wildly known and starting a digital business? Any similarities between the two?
I'm the same person. There was a while where I was like, whoa, celebration, champagne clinks, vacations. You know, it was very kind of, and I see like friends and colleagues of mine who have like just made a bunch of money and they're like, cheers, I'm on this vacation, infinity pool. Like I did that. And I thought like that meant I had a great life, and that stuff doesn't really matter. So I think in the middle, there wasn't as much of like, I didn't relate to who I was kind of in the middle of this story as much as the person I was in the beginning and the person that I am now. I'm really resourceful. I like to do things myself. I'm very hands-on. I learn quickly. I reverse engineer everything. Like I snoop. Like I believe that I really believe if they can do it, I can too. Doesn't mean that I'm going to be as good at everything, but I learn the mechanics of things quickly. I love creative. Like I love creating brands. It was, you know, it's like, it sucks that I've like moved on from two companies, but I'm also like really happy I'm doing what I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. And also I got to make another brand, you know? So it's like, I should like own a creative agency or something.
You should. You totally should. Maybe you'll speak it into existence. Now,
this is a better business model.
Well, I mean, that's what we talk about. So like in full disclosure, Sophia and I are a part of a mastermind. We've dedicated ourselves to six other women for the year of 2021. And so when I hear Sophia's talk, I definitely know this is where she wants to be. She's in her place of power. She loves it. But I also know, I'm like, Sophia, like, let's be real. There's something else in you. Like there's something. She's like, no, like this is where I want to be, which is great. But I kind of feel like when you're like, yeah, I could be a creative agency. I was like, girl, there'd be people dropping like Mack trucks of like cash to be like, yes, help us. But it's neither here nor there. I think that we hear resilience and we hear how you bounce back and we hear how you are constantly evolving, even though you're in pain. Movement is a thing that's absolving of that. But there are some people who are listening, and we started the conversation with that Instagram post about imposter syndrome. And for somebody, like, it sounds like, and maybe I could be wrong, you could suffer with imposter syndrome and yet you find your way out by reverse engineering, by snooping, by learning, by being a quick adapter. But what if somebody who just can't get over the feeling, I will never be enough? Like, how do you recommend to somebody who's struggling and can't move the needle?
Advice can be like so trite. You know, it's like my job and your job to give advice. And we're both very transparent about our challenges. I mean, there's stuff like surfing. Like, I relate to that because I just cannot figure out how to surf. It's a weird thing. I'm an only child and my parents were like, you're smart, from the time I was like young. And like, somehow, you know, I'll admit that, like, I'm a white woman. You know, I grew up middle class. There's a sense of entitlement that comes with that intrinsically. And there are plenty of white women who grew up middle class who don't have that. I've always had that. And that I'm very, very fortunate for. It's a privilege. In terms of feeling like you'll never be enough, it's just like, enough for what? Like, who's looking? And who cares if they're looking? You know, it's like, again, do you want to look back at your life and regret what you haven't done? Or do you want to go for it? And just know that everybody, the people you're listening to right now, have had those ups and downs, and not all of them are going to be public. You're not going to be, you know, and sometimes you're not capable of everything. Like, there are things that, whether it's your body or your circumstances, that are like impossible for you. And that kind of is how it is. And so I think taking stock of the blessings that you do have and what you are capable of, kind of pushing yourself into that capability is like your responsibility, because you're really lucky to be alive.
Okay, I just want to put a pin here and reiterate this, because it was kind of pretty massive, is to take responsibility, because we have one wild and amazing, precious life. And you could take stock of the things that you are good at and the things that you are doing. And that alone should give enough momentum for you to, at least and at minimum, take the next step. And when I hear you talk and I hear this advice, even if you think it sounds trite, I know it's wildly profound for a lot of people, at least to take the next step. And when we have these conversations, we're talking about imposter syndrome, and it seems like it's something that's a recurring theme in your life. You see it and then you do it, and then you see it and then you do it, despite the fear. And you've built businesses with hundreds of millions of dollars and lots of press and all this revenue. And now you have business class, and it's a course that teaches other people how to build a business similar and yet their own way in how you've done it. But in your opinion, what are the top three things that business owners should focus on as they grow their business in 2021? Now, I'm going to frame it a little bit that the podcast really caters to small and medium-sized businesses. So people making less than $30 million a year, and most of the people are not having funding or venture capital. What are the top three things that business owners should be focusing on?
I mean, the first one, and on our last call with my students after it was 8 weeks for business class in the fall, I said, like, what was the biggest thing you got out of business class? And I expected people to be like, wow, I really learned about, you know, how to do things. And they did. They really did. People have said, this is better than an MBA program. But the resounding answer was clarity. And, you know, you're talking about people getting unstuck and taking the next step. And that is just the hugest thing that I hear. I'm not a motivational speaker. Like, I'm not bubbly enough to, like, you know, it's like there, but business class helps you work through that when it relates to your business and finding your strengths and finding clarity and what it is that you're going to go after. Because if you're not clear, you're going to spin your wheels a lot. Mm. So clarity and a plan. And then, honestly, I want to say finance and legal are the most valuable, but I'd say the brand piece, where you really create your brand, and then leadership. There's marketing, there's a whole bunch of other stuff. But having a brand, you know how important that is. And then whether it's personal leadership or leading other people, maybe I'm passionate about this because I got it so wrong and learned the hard way what great leadership looks like. It was just really important to me to include that in the course.
So one of the things that you teach in business class is the problem solution statement. Can you give us a sneak peek of what that is and teach us how business owners, like, listening right now can create one?
Totally. It's like, what is the actual problem? Like, you don't have a business if you're not solving someone's problem. So, you know, you can say, this is my dream, I need this product, And often that's how great inventions come about. Like, wow, I have this issue. I'm going to try to solve it. Spanx. Poopery. I don't know. And that becomes, that is a real problem. And you validate that against, you know, you interview people. There's a lot of talking to your customers or your potential customers. It's very uncomfortable. My students go out and actually talk to customers and validate their ideas. And, you know, for example, there was a woman who, you know, talked to her customer, and her, you know, her assumed problem was there's not a lot of bras for small cup women, like super small cup women. And she found that women who've had mastectomies don't really have a lot of options. And so there's another kind of audience for her. And that's a problem that she hadn't known about, and something she's able to solve for after interviewing her customer, knowing that that's a problem she would never have known of. So you can come up with a problem, be like, this is the problem. I'm going to go build this thing that I love. But if you can love it, that's great. And you should love what you're doing, but you have to listen. And if there isn't a problem, there's nothing to solve for. So you have to adapt what it is that you assume to what it is that you hear and learn, and then validate from the, you know, problem solution. And then you have to go find out if people like the product that you figured out to solve this issue for them, which is a whole nother thing to do.
Okay. I love this. I love this sneak peek. So people who are listening, the problem is clearly identify the problem and repeat back what people are saying to you, and then find out other slivers of growth that you didn't necessarily anticipate. Because if you're not solving a problem, you're probably going to have a hard time having a business. So thank you for that. And I know that people are listening and they're just like getting these kernels of really great advice and insight. What's like the best piece of business advice that you got?
It's business advice, but it's life advice. And it was like an investment banker guy in like a giant suit with like huge shoulder pads at like a fish restaurant with me, who was like, life is a marathon, not a race. And everybody's heard that. But when you're young, you know, and I know a lot of people that are listening who are like, oh my God, I'm not on the 30 under 30. Or, you know, what, this person's 30 and they have it all figured out. And it's just like, it's okay if you don't have it figured out. You don't have to race, you know, it's like things take time. And you should move quickly. You should learn quickly, but know that the marathon is where it all kind of comes out. Like, it's in kind of retrospect that you can understand, like, you know, why you raced through the marathon.
Okay. So I have a question that's a little bit off topic. Were you on the 30 under 30?
Mm-hmm.
What came from that?
I don't know. Cause it was like 30 under 30, 40 under 40, like Inc. 30 under 30. Vanity Fair liked me at one point, you know, like Fast Company, Creative People, like all of that shit happened. It's cool. You know, I think there's a point where I was like checking it off, but it doesn't really, you know, and I'm part of creating this, you know, the glamour of entrepreneurship, because I had so much press and it was like, oh, that's the example. And at the end of the day, you know, that's not what matters. Actually, it's a lot better not to be in the public eye. Like, it's not like, if you have a community of people that care about what you're doing, there's no kind of award that can like change that. You know, some people might hear about you. I don't know who reads, you know, it's like your customers probably not reading Forbes. It's a nice thing to put in your LinkedIn bio. It's credibility building, and that is important. But you can build credibility without being like anointed by a publication.
So what I hear you say, if given the choice between building credibility with the community who respects you and supports you, or building credibility on a Forbes or an Inc. or a Vanity Fair list, what do you choose?
Community, because Forbes can leave you and your community stays. You know, you're on the 30 under 30 and you're like a top marketing executive and you're 29, that can end. And like, if you haven't, I you know, no, it sucks being like, everybody needs a personal brand, but like, it's the community I've built who have stuck with me over the years that are the reason I have a job right now, you know, and
Amen.
I'm very, very grateful for that.
I think that you could personify the modern day quote by Dale Carnegie. It's like your business will go farther being genuinely interested in two other people than trying to get 200 people interested in you. I think that you embody that. You embody resilience. You embody courage. And like it or not, you were thrusted into the limelight and you came out on the other side. And I think that people say, like, that's the person I want to learn from. And I want to say thank you for being open and candid. And I have no doubt that this conversation is so liberating to all people on all spectrums, wherever they are. I want to say thank you for taking the time to chat. Thank you for being so open. And I look forward to doing 2021 with you and for you and support you. And I'm just so in awe of you and your community. And I'm thankful that you can come in and share with mine.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm so impressed by you. And I'm so excited to be in this mastermind with you and get to learn from you too. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you. How can people find out all the goodness about you and Business Class? Yeah. Drop it. Let's go.
I'm just at Sophia Amoruso, and we in Business Class launches twice a year. It's takebusinessclass.com. My website's sophiaamoruso.com.
You know, I'm just going to put it out there because I want this audio clip because I just love being right. I can't wait for you to write your book on venture capital and that journey. I just can't wait. Yeah, I just, come on, girl. It's coming. There's no rush. There's zero rush. But I just think it would be so fascinating to, like, you've now run the gamut. Like, you've done venture capital, like, massive amounts of learning and press. And then you've now started a business entirely bootstrapped on your own. And I think that alone is fascinating. And you're gonna have to go through your iterations and figure out what this is so you could juxtapose the two. It would be a fascinating read. I mean, the layout would be gorgeous. I already see it in my mind. Come on, girl. Come on.
It's so fun, you know, using these existing tools like Kajabi. You know, it's like in the past I would have been like, I have to build everything because I want the button to look like that. And now it's like, that's not what matters. You can build a business really quickly with great content, with all these existing tools that didn't exist like even, you know, 5-10 years ago, and have a great business. So, you know, I'm not precious about how I build. I care more about what I build, I guess. So
I think that's a perfect way to end the conversation. Sophia isn't precious about how she builds. She's precious about what she builds. May that be the mantra until the next episode of the Jasmine Star Show. Sophia, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Before I let you go, I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that Sophia and I are in a mastermind with a few other business owners. We meet every 6 weeks and we commit to meeting for 90 minutes because we need to set goals. We need to ask for help overcoming roadblocks, or we need to see a situation from a different perspective. It's collaborations like these that have really grown my business exponentially over the last few years, and I'm very grateful for them. If you'd like to do the same, I'd love to help you. For 10 ideas to spark inspiration for your next collaboration and a checklist to keep your efforts on track, you can head to jasminestar.com/collaboration to download my free workbook, How to Collaborate with Another Business Owner. You can find this link also in the show notes, but it's jasminestar.com/collaboration. I can't wait to see how you elevate your brand, increase your sales, build relationships, and create win-win opportunities for you and other business owners. Download the workbook at jasminestar.com/collaboration and let's get collaborating. I'll talk to you soon.